Welcome back to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. Okay. I thought today we'd just talk about the archetype of hoaxes. Because it just occurred to me recently. And what I'm about to say is something that you will kind of go, oh, yeah, yeah, of course, whatever, yeah. And then when you really think about how to really pull the archetypal attributes, sequences, really just a sequence, of how hoaxes have been portrayed over time, especially the ones where we know they did it on purpose, then I think it helps us understand how future events are going to be used to manipulate mankind. Because if you think about it, if you go back to a point in world history where we were sort of in that Rick Gervais, you know, the invention of a lie movie, where no one lied in the whole planet. Just a few, you know, people crossed that line and probably even did it accidentally at first. And then I was like, oh, that was kind of cool. I got some benefits out of that one. I told her I was an astronaut at the bar. We have all kinds of names for deceptive lying moments, hoax being one of them. Yeah, the other ones have to do with the way that information comes to you. Could be propaganda. Then there are, you know, false flags. There are a bunch of those negative ones. But at the same time, we have magic tricks, don't we? We have all kinds of venues where and moments where we actually pay people to pull hoaxes. God, I hate that word, on us for entertainment reasons, because we like to be surprised. We like to see the impossible become possible. Now, if any of you are like magicians or something, I'm going to make you probably laugh because you're going to be way more skilled at this than myself. I suppose you could be magicians in several of these categories. You know, we typically think because we're humans, our perception of humanity is pretty dialed in. And I don't know exactly what, if 100% was totally dialed in, I'm not sure exactly what percentage makes us start hitting expert levels. Don't know. But there are some things that are positive that we don't think about, which are keys to the mind of man. I think you're going to dig this. If I made you laugh constantly, when you hung around me, I could just infect your very existence. No matter what we're doing, I can make it funny, and I can do it dry, I can do it slapsticky, I can do it whatever, let's just say. And you're just laughing constantly. Now, before you go attend a writing class or, you know, talk to someone super wise about these things, you ever wonder why you laugh in the first place? Like, what's causing this little burp phonic out of your body? You know without knowing that the more you laugh, you feel wonderful. You feel potentially relieved when, you know, you're just all pent up and you really have something you're focusing on and it's making you angry, and someone walks in and either makes that thing that's making you angry funny somehow, or better yet, they totally hit you from a right angle turn, something totally different, and you laugh. They take your mind off of it. Then you feel better because you're not processing the negativity, right? That'll happen all day long, and you won't know why or what it is, how it's psychologically happening, and then after the psychological trigger, how the body treats it. That's getting a little bit better because the internet's around and you have little doctor's articles. Well, I heard this, I heard that. So it is helping. You ever think why beings orgasm? Now, I'm going to give you two scenarios so you can think it through. But honestly, either one is pretty phenomenal, pretty amazing design, pretty strange thing. Now, most of us who believe we were designed, and you could be an evolutionist and still accept design through sheer survival of the fittest sort of thing. We needed to feel really good procreating. So the orgasm was just like this little piece of candy after you did well at the dentist, which was always really funny. Here, rot your teeth. See you later. Use that toothpaste, Billy. But there's a conceptual thing going on inside your consciousness, which could be located partly in the soul, partly in the mind. It also triggers a body effect, of course. Now, when you're with somebody else and you're having this experience, it's, I think, a little easier to understand, even though we don't, or it's easy to feel like you understand it, but we really don't understand it. I mean, obviously, you know how to make it happen. But why is your body erupting with all kinds of just wild stuff going on? Now, there's people that have a very mental one, and there's people that have purely physical ones. People with problems actually doing it are typically people with just a physical imprint on the moment, right? They are, they're just waiting for the mechanics of their body to give them sensory input to have that climactic moment. When you can be with the right person and it's conceptually amazing, then the event becomes 97% mental, 3% physical. And that kind of person has them when the wind blows too hard. But now, the most amazing thing about, you're like, I clicked on a video about the hoaxes and I got this orgasm talk. Love this channel. Now you're by yourself and you are getting a climax at some in moment. Obviously, there's some physical involved, but a lot of people realize that, you know, you are putting something into your head that is getting your body to the emotional state of climaxing. But you're doing that all by yourself. You are constructing a fictional thing in your head, whether you be watching something or watching something inside your mind. I don't know if people can do it without any input. Sure, that's possible. I think you're always thinking of something. Whether or not you remember thinking of something or not, I think you are. Why am I going on about this? Because I think you have to understand that there is a tremendous frontier of unknown associations within the human mind that are going to control how a hoax can be pulled off on you. Anything that can manipulate you, you have to find out whether you're naive about something, whether you feel like you're really weathered about something. It really has to do with, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Meaning, hey, anyone can trick someone one time, but you should learn the archetype of the trick and therefore not be tricked again. So if you're foolish enough to be tricked again, well, you got to stop and meditate a little bit. Now, I've never really known anyone that has ever had that truly happen. If you feel like you have been tricked a second time, the odds are that variables changed enough that it wasn't like the first one. You didn't get the indicators of the first one. But there's the old one. There's the old little trick where someone walks up, and depending on the frequency, they'll say, oh, you got something on your shirt. And you look down, and they flick your nose. Or, you know, and so you'll be like, oh my God, that was good. That was good. Crazy. Weird. The next time, they don't say the same phrase. They'll say something like, oh God, what's that? You know, or is this your badge, you know, or whatever. And they'll flick you in the face. They're going for the same physical archetype of, I'm going to do something and distract them to look down, and then I'm going to pop them in the nose. So the trick is, looking down is the variable. The trigger to make you look down is the variable. Now, I realize that might have been a little cerebral. We're supposed to be talking about the archetypes of hoaxes. So what kind of hoaxes are out there? Well, there's so many, aren't there? The one that came to mind, the archetype that came to mind when I first thought about doing this episode about 10 minutes ago, was the classic UFO sighting. I watched Dark Five episode today, which was so far back he wasn't narrating yet. But it was a picture of a guy, it was a picture a guy took outside of his farm of a creature that just looked like some, maybe a person suffering from dwarfism and may have journeyed out, may have been, could have been homeless person who just happened to have dwarfism, so they're not dressed the way that a human is normally dressed, don't know. Could be that he has a friend that looks a little strange and he got him to pose. Could be a mistaken or an accidental moment where, again, you catch somebody out in the wilderness and they're maybe having to relieve themselves because they're just in between bathrooms at that point in their life. And so you snap a shot and it looks funky in the camera and then you start telling a story. Think about all these photographs that have been taken over the years, especially the little girl in the spacesuit one I covered. I can't even remember what episode that was. Turns out it's the mom standing behind the kid. But it was just the way that the light hit their mom's back. It looked like a spaceship, and it was gleaning off of things that weren't the things that you thought they were. But because pattern recognition in the mind, you know, it's not trying to mess with you. It's trying to resolve things. Again, when you start to learn the lookup table between the, I guess we'll call it English alphabet, and the original hieroglyphs, and you see that a bird sitting on a perch is a lowercase a, you know, like I went off, you know, a U is a bowl, an O is a noose, W, M, and N are all waves in the ocean. Once you start seeing those, I get it. Okay, cool. You know, many of the photographs back in the day in the 50s, at least in the United States, of these UFO sightings were farmers throwing things from hubcaps to big giant gears and just tossing it and getting a kid to take a shot. And then you go get them developed. Maybe your buddy even develops them. And you guys just purposely sift out the one that looks real. And of course, they give it to a photo expert who, I don't know what the hell you could have done in the 50s other than maybe try to determine whether the negative had been spliced. And it checks out. More elaborate folks, well, geez, they could build in a machine shop a truly fictional UFO, like a prop in a movie. They could put it on a crane, lift it up really high, and then at some point they could pull a lever and it detaches and it's going to fall. It'll be destroyed the minute it hits the ground. But you have four or five cameras and you're taking pictures and oh my God, it's real. Then you get into the archetype. In any case where a UFO is truly detailed in view, usually only one person in the entire world's got a picture of it or ever seen it. When it's lights in the sky, then everybody sees it because it's just balls of light, which could be military exercise dropping flares. It could be, it could be even to do it to create the illusion. But the other one is plasma energy leaking from the crust of the earth in a desert, Phoenix lights. You know, and the lights over Washington, D.C., I think over the Capitol building, were utterly wild to look at. There's the Foo Fighters, I guess. Wasn't it Los Angeles or something? One thing I want to remind you about things like that that might be a factor. I've heard it every once in a while, but it's not mentioned that often. Your enemy wants to remind you how close they can get to you. They may have no intention of warring with you, and they know that you're sophisticated enough that you're not going to react in war with them, even if they show you how close they can get to you. But now imagine some of these exercises are Russia putting some aircraft over Washington, D.C., dropping flares on parachutes, or maybe even synthesizing a little bit of plasma energy. Just knowing when you burp these things into the atmosphere, they tend to rest. I don't think those are what those were. When Barack Obama became president in 2009, very, very early after he took presidency, if I have the year right, we had a missile shot out of a submarine off the coast of California. I think it was Port Hueneme, but I've seen the picture, and they kept denying to the public that they knew what this thing was. Well, it could have been. The assertion, I guess, in the communities that try to follow these kind of things was that the submarine was from, that it was a submarine and that it was from China, and all they were doing is sending a message saying, this is how close we can get to you. Yeah, maybe. It's romantic that way, but maybe not. Who knows? could have been a local inventor. But see that these things happen and the government finds out very quickly. And that's that was a good one. Russians dropped a bunch of UFO-looking dots over the Capitol building. A bunch of people took pictures of it. Now, we obviously can't tell the people that Russia can get that close to us because in our own hubris, we want to believe that everyone else is stupider than we are. So we'll tell ourselves and our comrades that we can't, comrades, our fellow Americans, that we can't tell them this because they'll freak out. It's another way of coveting information. Isn't it interesting that you know, no matter what you want to believe, you know that the sightings of UFOs and the sightings of Bigfoot feel and match each other almost identically. No matter how choice your footage is of a UFO or a Bigfoot, and again, you know, Bigfoot's funny because there's a lot of people dressed up in costumes. It's always a remote sighting. No one can ever find it again. And the other thing is that within those two genres of sightings that excite us, we have people admitting and getting caught that they were faking things. If it seems outrageous, then we're going to have to maybe pull back. Now, at the same time I'm saying this, I'm not trying to be a buzzkill for fun entertainment. I love at least UFO sightings. I really don't like Bigfoot sightings because they're so badly done. And when you hear about folks, well, I'll put it this way. When you usually hear someone talk about a UFO sighting, they're a little worried about the story that they're going to have to tell around the photograph or on the video or whatever, the sighting. Now, sometimes it's a rocket launch, like SpaceX putting rockets in space, and we get to see them here in Los Angeles, and they create these amazing plumes, and there's the side boosters and all that kind of stuff. And so it when that was first occurring, there was a lot of videos coming out of L.A. proper where people were legitimately worried about what they were seeing. In some cases, a lot of them are just blown away. A lot of them are super excited. The alien invasion's coming, right? But people remain fairly skeptical, aside from the handful of UFO abductees, right? That's a little bit different, but that's still a hoax for some. You also have your copycat groups that come out and try to usurp the power of perhaps a legitimate sighting to get benefit from society, to get a story. Now, I don't even know how we morally would judge anyone for creating a great hoax, really entertaining millions, if not billions of people with their hoax. They never get caught, but they, you know what? Because they provided entertainment that, aside from charging perhaps admission to hear the story, whether it be a movie, an appearance, whether you're doing harm, like we always like to say, I'm not so sure if a hillbilly tells you that Bigfoot existed. What's the hillbillies? I can't remember which state they were in, but they said they had Bigfoot in a freezer. They had caught one and they put it in a freezer. And they were taking all these cryptic pictures of it because ice had grown on top of this thing. It went on for months and months. I probably found it maybe a couple of months into its report, thanks to the internet. And the funny thing was, you looked at the photographs and you think, you know, depending on how astute you are with Hollywood props or you look back in time for costume designs, you're pretty certain you're seeing a costume. So, but they can get away with it because they're hiding it. They don't want anyone to take it from them. I mean, all these excuses why perhaps a shady tree anthropologist would be protecting what they have, right? But the hilarious thing was that the cops finally said, wait a minute, what if this is a human body that's decayed and someone's got their wife in a freezer because it was the only way they can do it. Now they've covered up the story by making it sound like he or she, whatever this thing could have been, was a person in a freezer. And so the cops demanded to see it. And of course, these guys coughed it up that it was indeed a Halloween costume that they had just simply thrown in a freezer. You know, so didn't hurt anybody. They entertained a lot of folks. For those who are probably you know, really trying to prove that Bigfoot exists. I'm sure in their mind there's harm being done to the credibility of their movement. I think never being able to find one when you want one is pretty bad on your credibility. You got billionaires, literally dozens of billionaires, who over time have either cashed out of their company and said, I'm going to go find UFOs, or they cashed out of their company and said, I'm going to go find Bigfoot. And they'll rent planes with infrared, and they fly over all the regions of America where these things are supposed to be, and they never find anything. So I could see them being upset. What other type of hoax archetypes are out there? And hopefully while you're hearing this, you're reevaluating perhaps things that you have been told. And again, if you determine that something is a hoax that you previously thought was true, but it brought you joy, brought you happiness, just chalk it up that you're growing up. And now you can see the magic trick and how it's done. But, you know, if you had a buddy, like I've had magician friends, and they do a trick, and for many performances, you are in the audience, and even though you've seen it several times, and you keep looking, and you get little indicators of things, but you don't understand what those little indicators are. Like the dude would reach in his back pocket, but he's got you looking at his left hand, but you see it on the fourth performance, I guess you could say. And you're, oh, something's going on with that hand. I don't know what it is. So you kind of get it. But now let's say your buddy finally tells you how it works, because perhaps you're going to assist on stage. And so you're thinking, man, I don't want to know how this works, because then the magic and the feeling of that reward will go away. But every single night he performs that, or she performs that, you notice the audience is where you were. The whole audience. And they're having a blast. And now you shift your positive endorphin feedback, your dopamine feedback, now is triggered off the audience's performance. And the magic and discipline and talent of your friend is even higher for one particular reason in general. They are able to recreate this event without mistake every single time. My buddy Jeffrey Bornstein, he used to be known as Jeffrey Steele. He does a trick in a nightclub where he has a woman come up and give him their wedding ring. And he has a trick where he manages to hold the ring in his hand, and then he ends up snapping his fingers as part of his thing. I think that's the way it works. And he shoots the ring, like a wedding ring with diamonds on it and stuff, clear into the floor and underneath everybody who's watching the show. And he kind of, sorry. Well, don't worry about that. We'll get it back. You know, and of course, intelligent people laugh and they're like, oh my God, that can't be my ring. That just can't be my ring. He would have never done that and blown it off. So let's keep going with this trick, right? And he eventually pulls out a wallet that is completely sealed, two or three different compartments. And on a keychain inside the wallet is this woman's ring. But you've been looking at the guy the whole time. And I've seen this trick done so many times. It's crazy. Now, theoretically, I know how he does it. But obviously, at some point really early in the trick, while everyone's watching, as soon as the woman gives him a ring, he has switched that thing in his hand to a dummy. Now, two things are occurring. He has to react to dropping someone's ring as if it is a total mistake. And he pulls it off every single time. His voice inflection, his expression on his face, but he's also kind of got this dopey character he plays on top of it to make it even more believable that this guy is just bad at magic, right? No one's ever chased the ring underneath the chairs. Ever. You know, sometimes you might flip it and it might, you know, land in somebody's lap and someone goes, oh, here you go. And it's a different ring and it would have blown the trick. That has never happened to my knowledge. It's so convincing that under two different occasions, women attacked him, punched him in the face once. But he's a stuntman, so before he was a magician, so no big deal for him, man. Sylvester Stallone cracked him in the head once on a bus and literally broke his nose. But he's also a Marine, so no problem with that. I mean, it just goes on and on. But do you ever get the idea or the feeling that we don't really want to figure any of this stuff out? that we want to keep a little bit of magic in our heart as much as the internet's trying to tear it apart. I think most of you understand that there's a couple channels, if not probably 10 dozen channels on YouTube where magicians are telling you how tricks work. There used to be that show on TV where the guy wore the mask and tell you how tricks work. Everyone's trying to figure out who that guy was in Los Angeles. That was a legit show. I mean, people wanted to take him out, man, because he was ruining one magic trick, one magic show after another in Vegas and around the world. Now, fortunately, people who like magic will always go back to the show, and they won't watch those shows because they don't want to be told that it doesn't exist or that these things are not real magic. Sorry. And I think that's the way that people metabolize UFOs, Bigfoots, religion. They just go, you know, I'm okay. There's no law that says I have to yet believe what you believe. So, I find this entertaining. I'm not going to mess with people who read tarot cards because I like that. I like people reading my palm. I like it. I like astrology. I like numerology. For whatever reason, it clicks with your soul. It is a bright moment in your day. It's a little bit of entertainment, right? One of the funny things I used to do is when you get a newspaper with horoscopes in it, based on the zodiac signs, I'd read the wrong one to somebody. What are you? Oh, you're a Pisces. And I'd read them Taurus. And they'd be like, oh my God, that's so me. And it was like, oh, yeah, it's crazy, right? Crazy how accurate that is. Because they wanted to believe it. And, you know, out of a paragraph of attributes that supposedly describes your astral personality, very accurate to some people. Now, I'm a Virgo, and Virgos are always said to be very meticulous, creative people, and just, it usually sounds just like me. Incredible. Incredible how that works. But I know plenty of people that are born the same day I was born who have not a single lick of that, of those attributes. And they have other very positive attributes that probably match other signs. But, okay, yeah. It's my reality, right? It's my consensus for my sphere of influence. It's interesting. What else do we know about the archetypes of hoaxes? And what other attributes affect the composition of a hoax? Some of you might have read in history that there were, I guess you could say, junior astronomers, if not for the time, expert astronomers, who had figured out the calculation and GPS location on Earth of where the next solar eclipse was going to occur. And they would track the sun. I mean, this must have been thousands of years of a particular family tracking this such that the algorithm popped out or someone documented it, someone kept grabbing the documentation, moving it forward in time. But the second that they realized that a solar eclipse was going to occur by a kingdom with a king or a queen, they would nut up huge, grab their gear, and go to the castle or whatever. And they would usually compose some sort of threat. It varied over time. They might say that your crops won't grow. If you don't, you know, I'm going to shut off the sun if you don't give me money. And if without the sun during the day, then none of your crops are going to grow. Yeah, because an eclipse during the day, a full one, and you don't know anything about any theory of anything, it's going to be dramatic for your consciousness. Still happens to this day. So here comes the eclipse. It starts occurring. The king has told this guy to go screw himself. And it starts eclipsing. And the king panics and says, give him whatever he wants. Just bring back the sun. Sure enough, it's going to be a natural process anyway. And you imagine what that event really looked like. It would be a funny Mel Brooks movie, History of the World Part 2 or something, where the guy's like, yeah, you know, because he knows it's going to take a few minutes for that thing to crest and get out of the way. Of course, with just a minor amount of the sun fully exposed, it does light up the day pretty good. But he's got to fiddle with time. because, you know, it's going to take a little while. Well, you know, okay, well, you know, your guy, just tell your king, you better not ever do that again, you know, whatever it is, right? Okay, yeah, sure, sure, whatever. Just bring back the son. Well, you know, come to think about it, maybe I don't want to do that. You know, he just keeps delaying it out. And the guy's trying to broker everything in the last second. Give me that horse. Give me that. Give me your daughter. Whatever. And he's just putting a bunch of stuff on the Barbie. Then a UFO shows up and blocks the sun. And the guy gets his head cut off. And the UFO goes home. The printing press and the ability to record facts in and around an event has greatly impacted the archetype of a hoax. Hasn't it? Like I said, religions were able to form en masse prior to the printing press. If Sub-It has anything to do with it from my previous episode, then the printing press was a mechanism to project into the consciousness of man, once you manifested to this reality, what is and what isn't, thus taking control back, literally, from the gods themselves. Because before that, you were able to contact your gods because you weren't sanctioned by other people's writings. So photography comes around, and it kills the folktale in a large part. You, especially when cameras hit, I guess, like pocket camera level stuff, really small cameras, you had easy facilities to go get them developed. It was a little more expensive back in the day because you had to buy a roll of film. And it took time to load the camera and to snap it and then cock it again and roll it up and do it again. So if a UFO was doing a lot of crazy stuff super fast, you wouldn't necessarily have the ability to record that as a layman. But then the 20th century comes around and we have 8mm cameras. But still, you have to have the camera loaded, ready to go, and you have to be all in the right place. So you being in your backyard in 1955, even though you own an 8mm camera internally with plenty of film in the refrigerator or whatever, you're stuck between a rock and a hard place if you're staring at a UFO or more than one or an alien right in front of your face, a being. At no point can you say, probably in your rational mind, okay, just wait there. I'll be right back. How does this work again? You know, you'd have to be a serendipitous thing where you have this camera rolling. You're filming your backyard with your kids. And then all of a sudden it flies over your kid's head and you grab a shot. But cameras advanced tremendously in the 80s. Now it runs on tape. Much longer play time, much longer record time. Quality is a little higher. It's color now. It still suffers greatly. You look at those old video camera shots, and even though it was remarkable to have consumer video, today it's awful. But now your cell phone has 4K cameras in it, front and back. No excuse. You see something, everybody's got their phone on them, don't they? If you don't, the guy or girl standing next to you does. It changes the game. Your credibility has to enhance tremendously. The chupacabra, right? This phantom animal from the South that lives in South America. Well, I've got friends of mine who are even younger than me that believe that those are real. They'll have stories about animals on the rooftops, and they told me romantically that they thought it was the chupacabra. And, you know, this house right here has raccoons the size of your dog running around. We've got possums up there. They crawl across the tree, go across this awning thing I've got, and then jump on the roof. And it sounds crazy. It sounds like you got a human being up there on all fours sometimes, like, was it the precious guy, right? Gollum. The evil one. So if you're passing a word of mouth around, your requirements for the story are less if you are a very credible person in your village than whatever you say is typically believed. But now, here's a macabre truth about hoaxes. I mean, this will surprise some of you. You'll be like, oh my God, I never really thought about this. And others, you're going to be like, yeah. It's George Carlin's old joke, which we're going to say here. George Carlin once said, you know, He thought that NASCAR and racing in general was the dumbest thing in the world, driving a car in a circle. He says, I only watch those shows for the crashes. I want to see fireballs and death. And he goes, that's why I watch them. And he's joking. Now, if you're in the racing business, it's probably not as funny. If you ever study Formula One racing and study how many people died, there's compilation videos of all the people who died racing. There was a point when a wreck equaled a death. And then there was a point where a wreck was just an inconvenience, which is hopefully where we are now. There's a couple exceptions to the rule. But no one wants to admit it. But the truth of the matter is, you get dopamine drops when you see those things. We all know about the day in September 11th, right? Horrific, amazing, groundbreaking day of destruction. And I remember watching those towers explode and fall to the ground. Now, a big chunk of my brain is going, oh my God. Like, I'm processing all that I can with my mind at the time, which was completely shut down and asleep. I'm thinking about lives being lost. I'm thinking about America being attacked. I'm thinking about just the mess that it just created downtown and how fast that's going to ever get cleaned up. But doesn't that go for every single moment like those? You are watching a car race and there is a big giant pile up and you get dopamine drops during these moments, and dopamine will never make you feel bad in your body except for when you go into withdrawal of it not being there. So here we are in the middle of realizing something really negative and we're getting turned on. That's in a worst case scenario is the only reason why I mentioned that, so that you can recognize, hey, when horrific things happen, you turn on the TV or whatever back in the day, there's a hostage situation, there's this, there's that. You are freaked out a little bit, and you're also getting the, you know, this stroke in your mind of some sort of positive thing, chemically speaking, right? Now, part of it's probably your mind trying to pad the experience because they realize you're in a, you know, fight or flight situation a little bit. So now dial that back to all the hoaxes we've been talking about, plus any other you can think of in your mind that are typically construed as a positive one. UFOs, Bigfoot, theories of lizard people and interdimensional this or that, you know, time travelers. It's funny, the thing about time travelers is that there's this big trend. Once we got a lot of photographs online to find doppelgangers between people here today and photographs of people in the past, which might even be their relatives. I haven't really heard anyone suggest a time traveling thing that has a negative spin to it. It's always kind of positive. And the more elaborate they get, the more positive they get. Whereas the one where the guy said he met himself in like a park or something like that, and he was much older. I mean, imagine you're a long lost uncle and you realize that your nephew that you never got to meet is a spitting image of you. I mean, some crazy younger version of you, and then you just walk up on him and tell him that you're him. And unless there's a scar or something that person has that you don't have, you'd have to have every mole, you'd have to have every anomaly. But some people aren't that smart, so you can pull a nice scam on them. So why mention the endorphin dopamine connection? Because it provides a skeletal backbone, a support mechanism for you to continue believing whatever is being asserted. And I'll give you a fictitious example between the two of us. Now, I'm pretty sure that if you're over like 10 years old, there's a point where if you were ever raised on the story of Santa Claus in Western culture, especially in America, he's a big deal over here. Let's just get that clear. Father Christmas in other areas, right? What's the theory? Yeah, the dude's got a crib up in the North Pole. Supposedly has a hot wife. We've never really seen her that much. But he's got a bunch of these little elf characters, which just indigenously love creating things. That's just what they love to do. Like the Keebler elves, man. This dude has a periscope into your life, a magical thing like in Wizard of Oz, this ball he looks into, and he can kind of tell whether you've been good or bad this last 12 months. In America, I will tell you, as whether it's a sick practice that we're doing or not, boy, you can get your kids to behave towards the end of the year, every single year. Boy, girl, doesn't matter. But at some point it gets revealed that your parents. What I told my kid was, I said, now you're Santa Claus. Santa Claus does exist, but he's you. I have a whole episode on Santa Claus if you're interested and the dynamic of whether or not it's a good idea to keep that alive or not. But now I find a way to either use internet photographs, my own capabilities, or maybe I figure out a way to do this thing I'm going to suggest here without actually producing any real raw evidence of any kind, anything could even be asserted as real evidence. Maybe I create a backstory. But I start to suggest, I mean, wouldn't this be a funny Eric Dubay scam on April 1st or something? But I start to suggest that this being really does exist, but that there's some sort of belief association that is required to bring him to you at that time of the year. It really doesn't have anything to do with Christianity, hence the South Park episode where it's Jesus against Santa. But I'll tell you this, you know, depending on how cynical you are in America, and if you're raised here, especially in the area where we pledge the allegiance to the American flag every morning as children in school, which was just cool, man, I have to say. These kids have no idea what they, the benefits they miss from being patriotic to their country. But if someone could make it real, I mean, there's all kinds of movies that do this, right? Where even there's a Twilight Zone that did it. What is it? Ernest Saves Christmas, where someone inherits the role of Santa Claus, that they absolutely do not believe in Santa Claus. It's either for the entire story or for half the story. And then the main character gets put into the role of Santa Claus. So they go from a non-believer to a believer. And they're the ones passing out the gifts. It's like this irony. It's beautiful. But if I found a little tiny nugget inside your mind of something that you would really rather believe and not believe, and I construct just the most minor indicators that we're actually onto something, I might get you. Now, the Santa Claus idea might seem ridiculous and remedial, but let me ask you this. How many people believe in UFO sightings that previously did not want to believe that UFOs exist? I'm going to suggest almost no one. You know, one of the greatest, and this story might be out there, if you know of one, please let me know. And of course, we have to take their word for it, but it'd be interesting to have a person in town, and especially a small town, let's say 10,000 or less, and they're always running around like Saul from the Bible, persecuting people who say that UFOs are real. And they've got decades of this behavior, and they're just acidic, they're bad, they've done harm. And then they get abducted. And not only do they get abducted in a way that they're completely lucid. They get one of everything that's ever been claimed in an abduction. They get anally probed. They have children with aliens. They go to foreign planets, whatever. They get the whole thing. They get levitated up into the bottom of the ship. And now they come back to their little community. And they don't really know what to do right away because they're like, oh my God, these people were all right. I was an ass. Now I got to figure out a way to find the leaders of that organization within my community, apologize profusely, tell them my story, and then try to get acceptance. You don't usually hear that story. You usually hear someone who has already had a pretty set opinion about them being real. Then they get abducted. That's why it was interesting when Joe Rogan was interviewing Dan Aykroyd. And Dan said he was at a convention where there was hundreds of abductees in this trade center or whatever. And he said, of all of you that have been abducted, how many of you would welcome it happening again to you? And he said that only 50% of the people raised their hands. I think that's amazing. Some people absolutely hated the experience that they had. Now, of course, the The thing I mentioned a really, really long time ago, and I don't remember exactly what episode it was, but I want to repeat it here because I meant to repeat it more recently and I forgot. There are a host of people that said that they had their children, even from their womb, stolen from them as a result of these abductions. At the same time, we know that the people that are rumored today to be toying with the very survivability of children for their entertainment or physical benefit, see adrenochromes, that if they wanted to go and grab kids and they could work with your MKUltra people, the MKUltra people figure out some weird anomaly, like, you know what, we do the XYZ PDQ and these people actually will believe anything that we tell them. They will believe that they saw whatever we told them to say, said they saw, you know. Somewhere in there, you probably understand me. And so they construct this scenario, this abduction scenario, making them believe it's aliens, but it's actually somebody on these weird groups. Now, the thing with Bigfoot, and I don't know where the very first Bigfoot story came in. It goes back a really long time. Almost every boy has had this little story happen in their life. A boy is out hanging out with his buddies, hanging out maybe with even his elders, his bigger brothers, father, uncle, whatever. I'm trying to figure out if I've done, I know I've done this, but I can't remember exactly one scenario off the top of my head. But what happens is you get freaked out by something. Let's say you're in the wilderness and a deer, a buck, comes around the corner and scares you. You scream like a little girl. And your relatives are like, oh my God, you know, this must be a bear coming after the kid. So let's, you know, they rush in and you're okay. And then you don't want to say that a peaceful deer freaked you out. And so imagine there's a scenario where a kid might say, or even a grown man, it's even probably more prevalent as an old grown man yelling and screaming like a little girl who's portrayed himself as super tough, and maybe in most scenarios he is, but something surprised the crap out of him, literally. And so he constructs the story. Oh, it was a big Yeti, and oh my God, you wouldn't believe how huge this thing is. Oh yeah, well, where'd it go? I just ran that way, man. Believe me, man, you don't wanna catch up with it. Well, we got a bunch of guns, let's go do it. Okay. And then, you know, every broken branch, you know, by a bear, you know, bucks that carve their horns on they polish their horns on little trees, so they're all damaged. It's all organic. It's all stuff that really happens. Now that's a Yeti that did it. It's a Bigfoot that did it. And so, but the story atrophies a bit. You go back to the camp and someone goes, yeah, you probably just got scared by some duck or something, right? No, I did not. It was still a big thing. So then that dude has got to defend his credibility and he starts thinking about it. Okay, what can I do here? Well, we track animals, right? And how do we track animals? You see hoof marks and little frog footprints, and that's where you know those animals are. So yeah, I know the ticket. I'll get some wood or something and I'll carve myself a Bigfoot foot. Not knowing the anatomical correctness of the whole thing, they create kind of a funky foot. They go squishing it around the forest, give it some time. Then they bring their buddies out. Look at that. Oh my God, look at that. As time passes, that starts to get analyzed by experts and starts being deemed a fake. And so the next person pulling the hoax understands the parameters that got the previous guy caught, and they do more and more research. They start building fake feet out of like rubber. Prosthetic rubbers or whatever, and they put them over their own feet. And now they hop to create a big, you know, foot distance. And it's squishing in like a normal foot. And so now the chronology of the footprint works much better. Maybe they had little hairs on it and stuff. By the way, I watched an episode on the 1967 one recently on Dark Five. And he mentioned a statistic about that 67 sighting where you see the female with the breasts, you know, walking across the, don't get excited if you haven't seen it, it's all hairy hairy suit thing. But recently, people have looked at that and said that the palms of animals are typically always bright. And this thing had a rubber suit palm. Just the coloring of the body is counter to all evolution that exists on planet Earth. And of course, you'll get your devotees that are like, yeah, man, well, that's the thing is they didn't evolve. You know, that's why they still exist. And you're like, oh, okay. That didn't mean that way back when you thought they stopped evolving, that this anomaly of skin pigment distribution was still not the case as it is today, you know. But what do we have after all this fun talk about a couple different subjects that lead into these hoaxes? And I'm going to steer past the psychotic, the truly crazy that are reporting all kinds of things, because it's sort of like picking on a drunk guy, you know. These people are struggling with their minds. We don't need to vet them because the problem stops at their consciousness having routine problems and seeing, you know, if you had someone that was crazy that you didn't know they were crazy, but they start reporting to you UFO sightings or whatever, and then you go to their house to sit down and talk with them to plan, try to get more shots of these things because perhaps they say they're seeing them all the time, and then you find out that they think their toaster's talking to you. Well, why aren't you, you know, you're not answering the question. They're like, what question? Well, my toaster's asking you a question. I don't know why you don't hear that, you know. I saw a tweet this morning, which was very interesting. And the tweet was something to the effect, it was a total projection of her internal mind. And it was something to the effect of, big tech is making everyone go insane because they can't communicate with each other. Now, I wouldn't have used big tech. I would have used the crisis that causes you to wear a mask. That's the one that's keeping people away from each other, making them go crazy. But this person posts on social media. I think without a doubt, every 5 to 15 minutes of her existence, from the moment she is conscious to the moment she goes to sleep. And so the threat of that almost mental dysfunction, that addiction to something that is absolutely fruitless in her life, she is feeling suicidal because that is being taken away from her. It's freaking her out. And because she needs, and it's funny, before this tweet, I would have thought she was a very mentally stable person. But she is angry, of course, that all of her followers are being taken away. And we deal with that on the show. For us, we can't even get to 5,000. I got videos that have been watched hundreds of thousands of times and still says 33,000, you know. But the monthly tick on that video is 1,000. Or weekly tick on that video is 1,000. Like my moon ones, I'll get news that they've been watched 1,000 times in the last 28 days. Way back in the day videos, still the same overall number. They're lying to you. They're cheating on you. But now I don't lose my whole life over it. I definitely would never commit suicide based on my social media watching. You think I just take a break because you're all gone. But the mind is a gigantic punching bag in this 21st century. It is, and you know it. Every time you open up sensory input in your body and allow these scumbags to talk to that sensor, it's tantamount to, you know, sadist behavior. I mean, you're a masochist, man. You love being tortured. You love being beat up. And why is that? Because the dopamine drops in your brain are still coming, even though you're being angered. But the other one that's sort of an unspoken attribute of these situations, I think it has to do with validation. We know that folks need to be validated. We, almost all of us, need to be validated. But I'm not sure we completely understand the minutiae of validation. I could probably do a whole episode on it. I won't, unless I really run dry on things. You personally want confirmation within your own mind to yourself, from yourself, that what you are thinking and what you have put in the true, false, maybe piles at least the true and false ones, especially, that that is a correct assessment of that information, that methodology in your brain, in your life. You need that for your own sense of security, that you're not crazy, that you're making the right decisions, because the more right decisions you make, the more right things happen in your life. So there is a level of information, or I should say a category of information, by which you can self-validate. It's an algorithm and a math problem that you invented that always seems to produce a productive result. That one's easy. But whether or not UFOs exist, hard to validate. Whether or not there's an afterlife, hard to evaluate, unless you have a spiritual experience. But even if you have a spiritual experience of some sort, some paranormal experience, if you're all by yourself, there's a bit of a bummer quality to the result, the euphoria, the eureka moment when it occurs to you, simply because there's no one there to validate and to prove that you're not crazy saying something outrageous. I was able to, on New Year's, I was with my girlfriend that was with me at Disneyland with the Walt Disney thing, right? And I'm sorry for mentioning this a billion times. I feel like a douche saying this over and over. But we had a mutual friend there for New Year's. And we were bouncing around topics, and this friend brought up something that was very, really close to that sort of event. Because she was kind of like, well, you know, I don't know if I believe in the afterlife and stuff. So I look over at my friend. I'm like, hey, let's tell her the story. I said, did I ever tell you the story? No, no, no. So I told her the story and I said, she was there. And sure enough, the whole thing came together in a much more profound way for the third person in the room, because they were like, oh my God, I got two people validating this to me, both of which I trust, but it's easy for him to say he saw something in his head. But to be tracked through the park to Bob Gurr, well, you know, with no other diversions, because that's what I told, you know, because I'll tell you, look, we walk directly to the guy. We only do two rides on the right side in Tomorrowland, which is Star Tours and Space Mountain. I didn't even stop at those. And I went to the kiddie area where we never go. So I'm telling you that story. But if the person that was with me was right here on camera saying, yeah, that's true, man, that's totally true, then it's going to hit you a little harder, isn't it? So that little validation thing, if you can have a third party validate to the person, the second party you're talking to, it's an amazing thing. But there's all kinds of subtle validation that we can get addicted to. I like it when the view counts go up on a video for at least two reasons. One, if it's information like the moon hoax, I like people to know that information. I like for them to hear it from me, because I think I've put together a pretty good repertoire of the things that just don't compute. I've never had a problem, even with NASA employees who are still trying to bullshit me to my face about the fact that we went. I'll hit them with my list of things. I got them on the ground in a Gracie triangle, about to break their arm in half, and they're tapping out in 5 minutes. I mean, it's never not been the case. Ever, ever, ever. Only douchebags online hold the line and won't talk to you anymore after you break their heart. I'm not trying to break people's hearts, just trying to wake people up. But the second reason that I like to see the numbers go up, and it has nothing to do with the first archetype, because this will be a different species of video, is that we're having a mutual experience. One, I like to know that some of the weird thoughts that I have, you have. So when I get these messages, which are very common, I can't believe you just posted this message 2 days ago. I was having a conversation with friends about this exact esoteric topic. And sometimes they'll go on and they'll say, look, I was having a problem getting anyone to understand what I was saying. And then I just tune into your video 2 days later, and you and I are on the same freaking wavelength. Every thought that you've had, I've had, and you've probably even had some more thoughts that I haven't had. So that's also very gratifying and validating that, well, you know, I'm not nuts, that these are actually thoughts that human beings have. And that's why I find most of the videos online, even though they might be entertaining and informative, boring, because no one's going into anything unless they have a source that told them that this is the way a particular concept works. Long time ago, season one, I did, I think it's like in the 80s or so, just look this up on deepthoughtsradio.com if you have any interest. But it's called The Unknown. That's literally the name of the episode. Just look up the word unknown on the website. What that episode's all about is the fact that we don't, well, rewind, human beings who elevate people up to academic status, academic rock starness, like, again, Neil deGrasse Tyson or Carl Sagan, they are allowed to go into various processes, could be a math thing, could be they're stepping on shoulders of other skeptics who are trying to figure something out. They're skeptical, but they're trying to figure out what it is. And as long as it's abstract away enough, when Carl Sagan talks, everything Carl Sagan is saying is true to some people. Same thing with Neil deGrasse Tyson, whose college education is probably going on 40 years now. Okay. So what that archetype is teaching you is that you have to go through these individuals just like a church. You can't get to God by yourself. God has rigged the whole system so that pedophiles are between you and him. And they have the key. Jesus gave it to the Pope, right? And you got to go through these people. You got to sacrifice your children into the system to save mommy and daddy. Well, you want my kid? Okay, I'll just make more. Go ahead. You just have that one in the basement. And hell, they're so abdicated to these people that whatever those people tell them is the way. It's the way. He said that we have to give him our firstborn. Okay, I guess that's the way. Everybody's doing it. Not thinking for yourself. So there's a big validation element to hoaxes. Aren't there situations where people will create a story and what they really want, and you know this is the case today more than ever. The resistance towards human development / do no harm policies of developing humanity into societies is being interrupted by the disenfranchised who were made disenfranchised by the people that they worship. But every day that goes by, as many times as they try to pass, you know, bullshit gender fluidity crap on us, it doesn't ever really work. So you're like, oh, you're disenfranchised. Oh, okay. So, you know what we're going to do for you? What? We're going to take your mental illness that you've got, that you think you're a teenage ninja turtle. We're going to make it law that everyone has to call you a teenage ninja turtle. Is that going to make you, does that sound good? Yes. Thank you so much, my Stockholm syndrome controller. And so then that crazy thing gets passed. Let's say that they're successful in convincing the world to go along with that insanity. But it doesn't really benefit the person at all, does it? It's not good enough. Well, yeah, okay, so they call me Ninja Turtle. Well, I'm still a loser. I still don't have an education. Don't have any trade skills. I'm weird. I think my toaster's talking to you. I need something else. Need something else. Need something else. Need something else. Because all this is all fluff. All this is crap. And so then you get people to say, look at me, look at me, look at me. I need this, I need this, I need this. Now, some people are just charlatans who charge money for everything that's supernatural that they have, this natural ability they have, they charge money for it. You could conceive of scenarios where, let's say John Edwards was real and he could really talk to the dead. Now, after looking at James Randi's analysis of that situation, I no longer think that guy's even real. But people want to hear things. As Prince said in Under the Cherry Moon, I just think if you tell people what they want to hear, they make it happen. When he was holding a box of tarot cards. He's right. I'm sure he's plagiarizing someone else for that statement. He's right. So you want to believe in UFOs? And you got a person you found online who maybe you live in a metropolitan area and they're in Chicago, they're in LA, they're in New York. You can go see him. Go see him speak. You want someone to convince you that this is real. And so it's entertainment on one level, but if you take it beyond entertainment, it could end up being a very destructive thing. Now, I think, again, one should explore all things. And again, it's very difficult to prove a negative. I've been told you can't do it. If someone claims to have seen a UFO, and taking a picture or whatever, But let's say at least they said they claimed to see one, but they have no evidence besides their elaborate story. You can't prove they didn't see it. Unless they said this photo is exactly what I saw, and this is the exact moment recorded, and eventually you see the strings, you find the Halloween costume or the toy that matches exactly what they took a picture of. I forgot the gentleman's name. Someone mentions this one to me, and I love it. I don't think I could do a whole episode on it, but I'll see if I can't figure out a way to get into some of this stuff. But this is sort of on topic, which is, and again, one of you commented, I apologize for not having it on hand right away. But there was a gentleman who said he went into a time machine and went back to the dinosaur days. And he brought back a picture of a pterodactyl, which even a paleontologist would say, okay, well, that one's probably doesn't really look like that, even if they did exist, which I don't think dinosaurs ever existed. Unless you want to call a saber tooth a dinosaur or a woolly mammoth a dinosaur, then dinosaurs exist. But Tyrannosaurus Rex, Brontosaurus, pterodactyls, it's all crap. But he brings back what he says is a photograph, and it's a fairly good representation of a pterodactyl in a photograph. Now, of course, he's got two things going against him, this dude who came up with this hoax. But then there was a third reveal, which is beautiful. I'll find this and put it in the video as a picture. I'll put the guy's name up there, too. Well, one, he said he somehow got access to a time machine. All right, well, there's your first hoax-a-rooney. But someone was looking at this pterodactyl and was like, you know, that looks familiar to me. That looks really, oh, my God. And I think it's a children's book where in the upper right-hand corner, this pterodactyl was drawn in this children's book about dinosaurs. And the guy merely took a really crappy photograph of the book, a little bit out of focus, and submitted as the real thing. And when they overlaid it in modern times, boom, the guy's busted. It's all a lie. But how long did it take for people to figure that out? And how many people sat next to this person thinking, oh my God, you went back in time and you validated dinosaurs for me. There's two support mechanisms to the story for the people that want to believe. People who want to believe that time travel is possible, they're on board. I mean, imagine like, you know, you just play out scenarios between husband and wife talking and one of them's like, time travel is not possible. Time doesn't really exist. Just an illusion because you can remember history, blah, blah, blah. And the other person's like, no, man, it exists. It totally exists, man. I just knew it. Then dinosaurs. Other support mechanism. People want to believe in dinosaurs. I mean, they get pissed. Dinosaurs not being real and the moon hoax, or the moon missions being a hoax, it's almost the same sort of weird, visceral, almost attack mode personality you get out of someone if wants to believe either one of those things are true. Man, we got the bones. What are you talking about? The bones. Hey, do you know all the bones are fake? They'll even tell you at museums that you're not staring at the real bones. Yeah, well, screw you. You know, paleontologists that have been in the business for 35 years who were told eventually they're going to hit a senior level within paleontology and they're going to be allowed to go into the vaults that are all over the world, supposedly, with all these bones. Now, do you find an old big femur bone from a mammoth? Sure. Can you put it together to make it look like a chickasaurus? Absolutely. Can you even grind down bone matter, boil it, turn it into a goo, and pour it into a mold? Yes, you can. And that mold could then be used to put sedimentary rock in there. Can't carbonate rock? Boom! You got a foundation for a hoax. We'll more often tell our family members and our friends that the world is run through conspiracy than we will say the world is run through hoax. But that's true. The conspiracies today are to create false truths, which are what hoaxes are. But they put inside the hoax a scaffolding of support mechanisms, like I-beams of things that you want to believe. They want to believe that a world leader who's never done anything racist in his life is a racist. The guy's already way richer than you'll ever be. So you hate him or you love him. If you're an entrepreneur, you find the good parts of the person and you take those and put them in your own practices to try and get more wealthy and more successful. And again, you could take a mechanism that made someone rich and you don't use it to create monetary value. You use it to create happiness, to achieve your goals. A simple lesson in perseverance will furnish either one of those outcomes. But some people can't let others have what they want. And it, just to push the point a little bit further, I'm going to retell the story I told a few episodes back, just to show you how early this little mental defection in the mind, I should say defect, but his cells are defecting also inside of his brain. But my cousin, he was around my age when he was 4 years old. He got to come over to my house. Maybe he was five, technically. And he came into my bedroom because the parents were like, we're going to watch TV. You go in the bedroom and play. And he stood on my bed, grabbed every single one of my toys, and was slamming them into the ground on a hardwood floor at no older than 5 years old, attempting to break them because in his mind, I had toys that he didn't have. Or even if he did have it, he didn't want anyone else to have any fun. And this was a defect at the age of five in his mind. He's no different today. He is no different today. If you befriended this guy, he would try, when you least expect it, to hide in the shadows and destroy what you have, whether it be your marriage, whether it be your property, and he will play stupid as soon as you report that something happened. He will literally go out of his way to destroy you. He's just a piece of shit human being. But he somehow was born with some inbred gene or something, which resulted in this bad child. So it can form itself extremely early in the process of man. And we have to assume that it can form very slowly over the process of a man. Look at all of the age brackets of people showing up to the stuff that's happening in the United States. The age bracket is usually pretty damn young. Older people are busy. They're successful. They got to pay bills. They don't want to have any of their personal opinions spill over into their other professional opinion, professional associates, potentially get them earmarked as being crazy or, you know, a weird human being. Now, what's fun about today is that the extremists have been fed that they're the majority. And so they're the cockroaches that keep coming into the light all the time, thinking that it's safe to come out. And now they're being exposed. The last thing you want in your life, and of course they have the opinion about you too, if you're opposite than them, they try to tell stories to themselves that you're mentally defective because you're saying the emperor has no clothes on. They need that to be true. But the interesting thing is, you know, if you run a business, for instance, and you're encouraging, well, I shouldn't say it, you are trying to evaluate a potential employee that once they get employed at your company, they get a bunch of rights to not be fired, depending on how your employment contract works, which is why you always want to create an employment contract that is a fire at will situation if your state or country provides that freedom to you. Because as soon as they go bad, you need to be able to get rid of them. But there's still stipulations that they can pull on you to extort money out of you. Again, when I was in the Silicon Valley area during the entire 90s and a couple years into this century, I watched sexual harassment cases that were completely bullshit. Some woman wanting to get a little bit of free money. She never worked very hard. She saw a Sports Illustrated calendar and in someone's cube and tried to literally get $100,000 out of supposedly being damaged by this calendar. It's something you could buy at the local grocery store. It was advertised on TV. All the images that are in this calendar were shown on television. But she didn't try to go sue the local television. She didn't try to sue Sports Illustrated. You can't do that for Playboy or Hustler and just show the inside centerfolds and go, this is what you're going to get if you send us $9.99. Can't do that, can you? Because that's explicit material. But a calendar was not deemed explicit. She simply saw a younger body, probably someone who's either genetically predispositioned to have a beautiful shape, but also probably goes to the gym, probably doesn't eat crappy food. And there was a jealousy envelope there. How dare you show me someone that reminds me of what I'd really rather be? You know, it's almost, and when you think about, like, let's say you go to a gym and you use the showers because you don't want to go to work all sweaty. So you show up in your gym clothes, you bring your clean clothes, you show up in your gym outfit, you go get all sweaty, get everyone else's goo all over you. And you need to go take a shower. Well, dudes are walking around naked with their towels on. No one's going, oh my God, I saw someone else's body that was better than mine. I'm suing you because I saw that. But that was the basis of her case. The other super common one in the Bay Area was if you weren't white and you got fired. It was always a racial thing. Now, does that kind of thing happen? Sure. Does sexual harassment happen? Oh yeah. Way worse than some stupid calendar on a wall. One of my close friends that work with Whole Foods, she told me the CEO and a bunch of people during her watch, which I have no idea if those are the same people that are in there today, would just talk about, she would recreate the conversations in the break room or even during meetings. And apart from, I think she even said one person exposed themselves, but that may not have been the same location, but definitely the subject matter being discussed in these rooms were like beyond inappropriate. I mean, if this was someone saying this stuff in front of your wife, you'd knock their teeth down their throat. I mean, you know, weird stuff like that. So that stuff does happen. I don't mean to invalidate that, but I know of a couple cases where people got the job, came in and worked a couple weeks to figure out the play, and they actually had senior positions well over folks that weren't of the same racial group. So they were in charge. They were in charge of all the other people. And they would cease coming to work and cease completing work when they came to work. And eventually, they got to work for like a year at like $120,000 in 1991. This is one specific case that my girlfriend was involved in because it was her boss. And they personally never had any issues. But when they tried to fire her for a lack of productivity, she went after the racial discrimination thing, and they finally found out that this woman who'd worked at Microsoft before had not only done the same thing at Microsoft, but when someone got the idea to say, she says she has a comp sci degree from Washington State or something, some college up there, I don't know which college, they went and called the college trying to validate the degree, and they said, yeah, no, this person dropped out of school and left her a year and a half and never got the degree. Lie, 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 lie. So the hoax archetype comes in so many different ways. From the person looking for a little bit of attention. You know, one archetype I think is very interesting with UFO situations has to do with the amount of old farmers, old dudes, and sometimes they drag their wives in it. It's always kind of awkward when the wife is dragged in because there's, you could just tell they're having weird conversations after they expose the hoax, where you can see the wife's usually not ever the instigator, if it's not true. And during the interviews, the guy's like, yeah, and this happened, then that happened. And they go to the wife and she's like, oh my God, this is getting worse. Because every lie he tells about our mutual experience, I have to remember what he said. He may not have any problem remembering his lie because he does it all the time, but she may not be a liar. So she's kind of going inside her mind. She's like, shut up. Like, you're up to like 50 things I got to remember about our abduction. Now, some folks have some pretty good radiation burns and a bunch of other stuff. So something did happen to them. I don't mean to invalidate the ones that are real, but the amount of like old guys that, again, like I said, channel aliens that talk like this. I am Voltar from planet. There's a guy that does that for real, man. He had seen too many sci-fi movies, but what he was doing is he's in his 60s or something. He's only got, you know, 10, 20 years worth of life left. Who knows? For all we know, he's been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. He's just having a blast on the way out going, what's this? You know? And so you're, you know, so there seems to be like a weird age bracket where this stuff starts popping out of people, at least in the 20th century. And this episode is not about judging people or, you know, saying one person's a bad person, one person's a good person. What this is all about is hopefully exposing a little bit of the metaphysics behind hoax architecture and replication and repetition, such that you can hopefully, after this episode, borrow from those old UFO sightings where you think maybe, or they were totally exposed, or you think it might have been a hoax, and look at the stuff that's coming out of the media today, or out of a politician's mouth, or a banker's mouth, or something that's going to really result in you suffering. The other catch-22 to the whole thing is that you can get to a point where, and I said this, I think, in my conspiracies episode, but you don't want to get to a point where everything in your life is a conspiracy, right? And it typically, I will just simply tell you, if you were brand new to anything relating to a red pill of any kind, I would say to you that unless you are massively enlightened already, and it doesn't matter what age you are, you know, random stuff wakes you up, and that's just the law of the land. But you will most likely go through months, maybe even up to years of your life where you're obsessing on everything being a conspiracy. The catch-22 to the catch-22 is you may find a really good source of red pill information that's already been vetted by millions. It's 10, 15-year-old data, maybe even 50 to 100-year-old data, depending on what path you're going down. The financial system goes back hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands of years, right? Jesus turned over the money changers in the temple. Doesn't matter if Jesus was real or not. Someone wrote that in the book, and money changers are who runs their world today. So whoever put that story together knew they wanted to create a bona fide enemy of the people, and their savior is turning over their tables, telling them, you better change your ways or you're not going to see the promised land. Then that person becomes further a hero, never paying attention to the fact that during their entire existence, during the entire existence of that story, of that mythos, those money changers have never lost power. Quite frankly, they have almost gotten to a point of total eclipsing of anything that would be construed as not in their control. You want to see as much as you can see. The minute you will start backing out of the overload and potentially cease seeming crazy to those who are still blue-pilled is the first moment in your life where you find something that was pitched to you fairly convincingly, and you yourself, without anyone else bumping you in the shoulder, you figure out it's actually not true. You're like, oh, you know, I thought that was a hoax. I thought this, but it actually isn't one. It's this, this, and this. And I understand how the hoax came about in your brain, but I did my research myself personally, and I figured it out. Once you do that, then you have to do that purge I talk about. Push everything out in the front lawn that you think you believe or don't believe and reevaluate it all back into your system. Truth, false, maybe. So I hope this is valuable. I'll tell you, you know, there's one thing about this show that I'm noticing, which is, it's sort of an unfortunate critical mass problem that I notice in this situation. Let's say this episode's good for you to open your mind a little bit, and you're doing your own associations and connections and assessments. But let's say I have, out of 570-plus videos, let's say I've got 200 that are pretty good at doing this to you. They're mind-opening. Again, hopefully it's more your DNA by the time the episode ends than my DNA, and I'm just triggering you to go in these directions. The bummer is that, one, I think few people go back to old episodes, but two, I don't personally have a method to easily, with the time that I have available to do the show and edit the show, to really keep almost a college-level curriculum of these epiphanies. Let's just say they associate with each other. That's why I try to mention episodes that are related to the one that I'm on, so that you can go further down this path if this is something that turns you on. And then it might be that in that episode, because it's two, three, 3 years old, I'm mentioning other episodes that go back even longer, and that you're able to keep hopping back and forth. The one thing I never have time to do is to go into my videos and rewatch them in edit mode on YouTube, and then drop the link that when I say that video, the link comes up, because I don't find that has much value, because you're not going to stop watching the one you're watching to go watch another video. That's why that mechanism to me is insane. That's why deepthoughtsradio.com is so important, because the search field is worth everything if you're interested in a particular subject matter. And I try to categorize the videos, but even the categorization within self-improvement, which is where a lot of these end up, or social is another gigantic area that has a lot of these little nuggets in there. It's hard to further qualify it so it's easy for you to find a thing, because we're talking about the esoteric being analyzed, aren't we? Shouldn't be that way, but it is. But anyway, on that note, if you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, please go. Everything on there that you could possibly want that I can offer you is on there. So we have, the only thing I want to say, because there's video, audio, social media. The social media, because of recent events, Parler has been added back to our, I don't think I ever took it off, but I also put back on their Gab, because even though their site is struggling horribly right now because of a surge in traffic, if that's where people are going to be, then that's where we need to be. Twitter turned the account on, but we know everyone's leaving that platform. So whatever. They unlocked our account, so I put it back up there. But anyway, the only other thing important is the ability to contribute to the show. So many of you have been so generous during these really tough times to part with a buck. Hopefully I am giving you your value. But yeah, if you haven't joined Patreon and you want to get the episodes potentially 12 to 24 hours before everyone else, that's the way you do it. You get the drop the second that I'm uploading it from my computer, which usually takes about, I don't know, 20 minutes to process so you can watch it. But you can wake up, you can be asleep when I drop this thing, and when you wake up, you get to watch it 12 hours before everyone else, get your comments in, which means I definitely get a laser-focused response to your comments, because you're coming in hours early. And I still am looking at the views of the Patreon folks before I launch it. But hopefully you guys are enjoying the simultaneous release on all platforms too, which I'm going to continue doing to the best of my ability. Anyway, take care of yourself and someone else, and I'll see you on the next Deep Thoughts. Over and out. So they go from a non-believer,